The Raiders' reign in London. Has Patrick Mahomes been found out? And will anyone ever successfully recover an onside kick again? All that and more. It's NFL.
My favorite lane. I always save for next one.
Running like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Yes, hello and welcome to NFL Only Better, your weekly look ahead to all the action that is coming your way on Sunday. And it's a really exciting Sunday as well, because if you are so inclined, there's about 12 hours of live NFL action on the box for you to enjoy. Joining me today is, of course, the man who sits beside me regularly. Yes, he's very lucky indeed. It is Mr. John Baff. John, welcome to the show once again.
Hello, Kieran. It's fantastic to be here beside you again.
And joining us on the line, of course, from his palatial mansion, it is Mike Carlson. Mike, thanks for having us.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of better off with this kind of virtual sitting next to you rather than literally sitting next to you.
There's only room for one of us here, Mike, and that's me.
See, the way I genuflect to Mike because I said thank you for having us, despite the fact that we call him.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I don't get this sort of welcome, Kieran, when you pick me up at 8:30 in the morning.
Listen, we always look back at what we got wrong with the weekend. What we got wrong for me personally last weekend, of course, some of you may have noticed there was some sound issues. We had a little bit of problem here with the desk that was not noticed by me. That's completely my fault. So if it's the first time you're ever listening to us, it's going to be much better this week than it was last week. If you are someone who listened to us for the first time last week, I can promise you that, as you can tell, it is going to be better this week. And if you're someone that listens to us every week, and there are thousands of you that listen to us every week, and I'm very, very happy that there are, again, thank you for sticking with us during what was a little bit of a problem last week. And of course, I will take full responsibility for that. NFL only better every Wednesday. This week it will sound better. And of course, you got football coming up tomorrow, and racing only better as well. So the gang are all in, and there's more to come. Lots of exciting stuff to come. Mike, got to start with you. The Raiders' reign in London, it's something we did get wrong. I really fancied Chicago. And I'll tell you how much I fancy them, guys. Five-team ACCA. Only team that let me down was Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. Mike, it was a bit of a surprise, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you ask what we got wrong. I basically got everything wrong.
We've gone from everything right.
It was an easy week. And even like my backup to Chicago was saying take the Steelers over the Ravens. And although the 3.5, if you took the 3.5, you were okay. I was saying, you know, I like this so much, I might take it on the money line for the odds. And of course, then you were wrong. But what the Bears just came out flat is the easy explanation. It was a very bad first half, and that was made worse by losing Akeem Hicks on the first defensive series of the game. But I think you have to give Oakland a lot of credit for game planning very well for the second week in a row. And defensively, they did a lot to stop Chicago, and it took Chicago a while to adjust, and they were helped in the second half by Oakland giving them a great turnover. But, you know, in the end, the game comes down to a roughing the punter penalty, and then the Raiders doing a fake punt on 4th-and-1, and Harris fumbling the ball, and then the fumble being ruled not a fumble, which was the correct call as it happened. Although the idea that when your elbow hits and you then fumble, it's not a fumble. I've always hated that concept. But that I'm old school and grew up in the old days where you had to sort of keep the ball when you hit the ground. Anyway, but it was a great game. It was a great first NFL game to have at Spurs Stadium. It's a beautiful stadium for American football. They have an American football pitch that they roll out as well. And sitting up there doing it on the radio for TalkSport, the sidelines are unbelievable. And I really love just doing the radio commentary, because when it came for my time to analyze each play, you could just see things so clearly. It was amazing. You could see the way the Bears, who played nickel basically the whole game, stymied that crossing passing attack that the Bears like to run. So the Raiders were basically stuffing the middle up. It looked a little bit like what New England did in the Super Bowl against the Rams, and it worked really well.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mike, that Josh Jacobs seemed to have quite the game, 123 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I know that John Gruden has been singing his praises even before he drafted him this year. What were your impressions of Jacobs out there?
Yeah, we talked a little before the game because Gabe Jackson was out of the starting lineup, and I said I thought they would put Denzel Good in at guard, which is what they did, who's actually bigger than Jackson. And they have a huge offensive line. It totals about 1,700 pounds, or close to a ton. Nice and Jacobs looked fantastic running behind them because he's a combination of strength and patience, and he's got a burst. So he was getting to holes and then getting through them and making it difficult for the next guy to tackle him. It was a really impressive, you're absolutely right, it was a really impressive bit of running. And, I think he was one of their three first-round draft picks, and they were looking, I think, for someone to be a Marshawn Lynch type. Mm-hmm. I think he's not quite the beast that Marshawn Lynch is, but he's certainly as good a runner and maybe even better in some ways.
Yep, I enjoyed the game. I did feel Chicago would win. Mike says the old school with the elbow. Well, I agree with that now because it really hurt me in that game. But what I will say is it probably wasn't the worst bad beat. And you mentioned it there, Mike. We got to talk a little bit about Ravens at Steelers because that line was tough if you backed with the 3.5. It went some people's way. Other people got really hurt by that.
Yeah, and there's that school of thought, but if you look back on Raiders-Steelers games, they're almost always decided by a margin between 1 and 4 points. So the 3.5 is most of that 4. But I really thought the Steelers were going to be good enough to win that game outright. And in some ways, I think they were. They were unlucky in a sense to lose, although they played better when the third string quarterback comes in than they did with Mason Rudolph. But Devlin Hodges, the third guy, is going to be somewhat limited if they have to go with him as the starter. And if Jalen Samuels doesn't actually try to throw a real pass as opposed to just lateraling the ball forward, then they save themselves one score in that game, and maybe that's enough for them to win. But otherwise, they sacked Lamar Jackson. They held him rushing. Ingram and Edwards didn't do much rushing. They didn't allow any particularly long passes or anything like that. And so that was everything they needed to be able to win with a backup quarterback against Baltimore. But they just, they just couldn't put it together.
Yeah, that's an interesting. But my bet, I think last week's show, I predicted, just to change topics slightly, that the Buccaneers were going to beat the Saints in a very high scoring game. I got the high scoring game part right,
Yeah.
It was the Saints who obviously came out on top. I think the reason I picked that was because
You're not very good at it, it would appear.
Well, come on, Kieran. The Bucs, they just put up that score on the Rams the week prior. I like some aspects of their defense, like Shaquille Barrett and people like that are very, very good. But the main point that I was coming from was I'm still before last week, I was still somewhat unconvinced about the efficacy of Teddy Bridgewater as a starting quarterback. And I think he kind of proved me wrong. How do you think Bridgewater performed last week, Mike?
I thought he looked really good, and he got he got time to look good. But obviously, they're settling into that offense now, and I thought it was interesting they let Taysom Hill have a couple of snaps at quarterback, which they hadn't done up to now, which I think makes them. It's a signal that they're pretty confident in what Bridgewater can do. And I had the Rams on that one because the Saints on that one because I thought their defense. Is good, better than the Rams' defense, and 6 sacks of Jameis Winston was a big factor in that. And again, one of the strange things about last week and the week before, to a lesser extent, but almost as big, is that if you stop run games, you're going to stop a lot of teams in this league. A lot of teams can't really win in a passing first environment, and that was true of Tampa against the Saints. And just to go back to Pittsburgh one more time, one of the key things there was the Juju Smith-Schuster fumble, which, again, being old school, to me, that is a fumble. It certainly is a fumble. But you see that same play ruled an incomplete pass almost every other time when the receiver catches the ball, turns and takes a step or two, and then gets hit and drops the ball as he's sort of tucking it in or whatever. And they always talk about continuation of the process and all that kind of stuff. And it's obviously a fumble. So it was the right call and the right play. But it just galls me that when you look at it, there's just no consistency on that. And I had my annual rant. I felt sorry for Tampa. That's what reminded me of my refereeing rant, because Tampa challenged a fumble call that was ruled not a fumble, and they were absolutely right. And then the NFL screwed them by saying there was no clear recovery. Now, if you watch the replay, you see the ball come into Anthony Auclair's hands at the bottom of the pile, but you don't see him actually like grip it and have control. But if you were watching real life as it happened, you saw Auclair come out of the pile with the ball. So he obviously had to clear possession of it. And it just, you know, it was like the height of alternate universe, bizarro world, not to give them that call. And Bruce Arians was rightly incensed, and then even more rightly later in the game when you had the, what do you call it, the hand fighting, as they say, between Michael Thomas and Vernon Hargreaves, and Thomas quite clearly pushes him off, but they didn't call an interference penalty because the referee said the two were hand fighting, so no one gained an advantage. Well, if you don't gain an advantage by pushing the guy away, you're going to allow them to keep their hands on each other, then we're, you know, you have to draw the line at a push.
Yeah, we saw hand fighting in the Washington Patriots game called on Julian Edelman. It was a crazy call. They challenged it as well, so... Crazy stuff.
There's no consistency, and that's, you know, you can have crazy rules and you can have crazy interpretations, but you have to be consistent about it. And there is no consistency. It's all judgment call.
Yeah, consistently crazy is what we're looking for. Final one that we'll just look back on very quickly, guys. A lot of people, of course, would have been looking at Kansas as kind of their get-out stakes of the weekend, because I think the San Francisco-Cleveland game was a lot tougher to read. I felt, even though it was a big hand, I think it was 10.5. 10.5 was probably too big, but I certainly didn't see the Colts winning there.
Yeah.
Does that raise issues for you with the?
Well, I mean, Kansas? It does to a certain. I mean, I think I might be partially responsible for that Chiefs defeat
What Andy Reid has come out and said.
On last week's show, I made a point of saying how the Chiefs have scored 25 plus points for the last 25 games in a row, and then here they go and score 13 the moment I say that. but I think, in that game, I thought the Colts played very, very well. They played to their strengths, and they played also to the Chiefs' weaknesses. Not that they have many, offensively at least, but they kind of isolated the fact that if you can keep Patrick Mahomes from running outside the pocket and extending plays like that, you can really, really stunt his ability to make those plays. So they kept him, they kind of forced him to throw early and to throw quick, and that played into the Colts' defensive hands, I thought.
I think, Mike, we'll get your views on it. If I'm being honest, I think the Chiefs are still a player away from winning the Super Bowl. And I know Mike actually tipped them up in Mike tipped them up in our Super Bowl preview show that we did a couple of weeks ago. Are you still liking the look of them, Mike?
A lot depends on what they can do with the guys up front. I think the one player away, when Tyreek Hill comes back, that might be the answer. Mecole Hardman isn't really ready yet to be the threat that he is. But when the two of them are there together, that might be useful. But right now, their problem is they are just as incapable of stopping the run in Steve Spagnuolo's 4-3 defense as they were when they were running Bob Sutton's 3-4 defense, and they had injuries on both of their lines, but predominantly on the defensive line, and that's where the real problem is going to lie. If they can't stop anybody, and you can come in and beat the Chiefs by doing what the Colts did, which was run the ball, just like the Patriots did in the playoffs last year. You know, it wasn't that Marlon Mack gained 200 yards; he gained 150 or so, or 135, but that they controlled the time of possession in that game, something like 37-22. And usually if you have that big a time of possession, the game is going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I think one of the blowouts actually did have a 37-22. But what that does is keeps the Chiefs offense off the field.
That's true.
That's the best way of coping with a high powered offense. In fact, San Francisco had a 37-22 22 advantage over Cleveland last week, and that's what you usually expect, is that it won't be a close game. So you know that to me is the story of the game. If they can't stop the run, that's what teams are going to do, and any team that does have a good offensive line and a good running back is going to give them a problem.
With that said, Mike, do you think that if you were a Chiefs supporter, would you be starting to question the amount of money they've paid to acquire Frank Clark?
Probably.
I mean, I'm just looking at the stats. He's got one sack and about five or six tackles through the first five games of the season.
Yeah, and I don't think you can expect, you know, you can expect Frank Clark to provide you with sacks per se. The idea is to provide you with the kind of flexible rusher who can move inside and out and generate pressure, and then have other guys who can pick up the sacks. And of course, Justin Houston and Dee Ford are both gone, and they don't really have a kind of replacement as a 4-3 defensive end. You know, you think about Spagnuolo's best years and his reputation more or less rests on that first Super Bowl win for the Giants against the Patriots with OC and Justin Tuck. And, you know, OC was a good but not exceptional one-on-one pass rusher, but they could open that up because they could get the pressure from the inside with Tuck on passing downs. And that gave OC the ability to get pressure as well. And that's really what they need from Frank Clark. He has to be Justin Tuck. He has to be Michael Bennett in the Seattle defense, you know, and right now I don't think he's doing that for them.
Okay, well, we'll look ahead with interest to see how the Chiefs get on this weekend, because there's a game we're going to touch on. But a couple of little things that came up during the week that we'll very quickly get your views on just before we look at the games ahead. First thing is, guys, is anyone ever now going to get an onside kick based on the rules that they've brought in? They've banned Justin Tucker's drop kick that he did for the Ravens so long ago. Yeah. Like, the games, Mike, are meant to be designed to come down to the last play. That's the design that the NFL wants, to have exciting games. If you haven't got a chance of getting the ball back, if you're two scores down with 2 minutes to play, are they as exciting anymore?
No. In a word, no. And I agree completely. I don't buy the injury argument for onside kicks as being kind of like more dangerous than most other plays. I half buy it for normal kickoffs, where I think the impact can be a lot more devastating. Yes, you're always going to have a scrum. I hate the idea that you innovate with Justin Tucker's drop kick, and that really is the solution, which when you look at the rule and the number of guys you have to keep up on a kickoff up toward in the first 10 yards of your receiving team, there's so much space behind that a rugby-style restart really ought to be something that NFL teams are looking at. But that's difficult to do off the tee, and the only way to do it really is to bounce the ball off the artificial turf to get that first high bounce. But with an American football, the pointy little hard thing that it is, it's hard to, you know, to get any consistency on that. So the idea of drop kicking to me made a whole lot of sense. And I was thinking this was going to lead to an explosion of drop kicks that would be contested on lots of kickoffs. And that would be more interesting than most kickoffs. Now we were talking about Cordarrelle Patterson, who tried to return the first couple of kickoffs for the Bears, and had one decent return. But the thing is, on kickoff returns, anything over 25 yards is considered a good return. But if you average 26 yards a return, you're only gaining 1 yard of field position. If you take the ball in the end zone, you're going to get it 25 anyway. So really, to make it worth that kind of effort, you need to be averaging 30 yards a return, and not many guys can do that nowadays. So it's a kicking game is something that they've made worse by trying to make it better, but I don't think they're actually trying to make it better. I think they're trying to eliminate it from the game completely.
Yeah, I agree too, John. It's a shame, because some of the greatest moments in the last couple of years, Seattle, Green Bay, obviously, I think it was Jordy Nelson, Mike, it hit off his head.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the great memories of the last decade.
And kick returns are the most exciting plays in the game.
Absolutely.
Those are the home runs of American football.
Yeah, and if you take them out, John, it's...
You hit the nail on the head with the first thing you said, Kieran. This is a viable part of a lot of team strategies as they enter into the fourth quarter, particularly when the clock is keeping ticking. So if you restrict the chances for them to be able to actually complete these things, the nonstop kick.
I genuinely don't think you can win a game if you're two scores down now with a couple minutes.
And if the argument is, as Mike had alluded to, if the argument is something to do with the NFL wanting to reduce the amount of impact injuries from people just running into each other. I don't know, maybe they can do something else to maybe reduce the distance from 10 yards to 5 yards for onside kicks or something like that. So that would obviously, it would make it more competitive between the two sets of teams to retrieve the ball.
You have to announce that you're onside kicking.
Yes, yeah.
So the Saints in the Super Bowl, when they come out in the second half and go onside and take the ball from the Colts, that never happens.
Exactly.
And that was one of the two plays that decided that Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and a great Super Bowl, actually, as well. Okay, last bit of news, I suppose, or not really news, but last bit of things that we will discuss before we get on to this week's matches, right? It's actually a theory that I've stolen from someone else, but I'm going to bring it to you guys as experts, is that the NFC is a dogfight, absolute dogfight. You look at the way it's going already. There's so many teams that really, I mean... Cowboys are 3-2, Eagles are 3-2, 49ers 4-0, Seahawks are 4-1, the Packers 4-1, NFC North 2-1-1, 3-2, 3-2, the Saints are 4-1, the Panthers are 3-2. It's a hugely tough conference. Mike, we'll start with you to get your opinion very quickly. Does that help or hinder a team in the long run? Like, who eventually comes out of this battle and then takes on either the Patriots or the Chiefs, who have, I'm not saying they're breezing through in any way, shape or form, but the Patriots have got four or five pretty easy games. Kansas have been running over a couple of teams. The NFC, like, are they going to come out battle-weary or battle-hardened?
I think it's battle-hardened. I still think that the best team in the NFC is the Saints. And with Breeze there, I have no hesitation in saying it. With Teddy at quarterback, it's something that sort of pulls them back closer to the pack. But then what you look at is who's going to be able to absorb the grind of the season, and who's got the players who can make those big plays when they're necessary in a close game where you haven't been able to dominate one way or the other. And that always screams Russell Wilson to me. I don't think there's a single player in the NFL who's more able to conjure something up out of nothing. Maybe Pat Mahomes, but Mahomes tends to have more options avoiding his having to conjure. And my problem with Seattle is that their defense isn't half as good as they think it is. And that's going to be a handicap all the way through. And then, the other team that you look at is Green Bay, who have Aaron Rodgers, who can do the same sort of thing. Usually when a team rises above, it's because their defense can carry them in a game where their offense isn't playing well. And Green Bay all of a sudden seems to have a defense that can do that. The Browns obviously have a defense that can do that, but their offense plays to terrible nadirs of badness regularly, which makes it a little more difficult. I think this is just going to run. It's going to run and run, and the NFL may be breaking ties by using like the ninth level of tiebreaker procedure at the end of the season, because in a sense they've achieved a perverse form of parity where there is no exceptional team in the NFC, and there are a couple of really bad ones that change the competitive balance of the whole conference.
True, yeah. Well, there's only two undefeated teams in the NFL now, and there's only one undefeated team in the NFC, and that's the 49ers, Mike. So particularly after the win, the big win against the Browns on Monday night too, are the 49ers there to stay? Are they legit?
I think I asked the question, Sean, but I'll allow it. I'll allow it, guys. You continue on.
You're looking busy there.
That's the real question this week that everybody's asking. Does this make them legit? Now, you have to take into effect, if the Bears came out flat in London, the Browns came out so flat in San Francisco, you would have thought that they'd taken an all-night flight to get there. It was very strange how much they helped the 49ers look good, defensively especially. But the 49ers, I think, legitimately are a pretty good defensive team now. They'd be better if Akello Witherspoon was still there. And I think offensively, I just think Matt Breida and a healthy Tevin Coleman are a good pair of running backs that they can use. No offense to Jeff Wilson, but I couldn't see him fitting in to their offense the way that they can. They remind me a bit of Atlanta, which is not a coincidence since Kyle Shanahan was there in Atlanta's Super Bowl year, because the defense is playing well enough to let that offense generate something, but they don't have the wide receiver that Atlanta had in Julio Jones, and that somewhere down the line is going to wind up hurting them, because they won't have the options other than Kittle and the running backs. And if a team is able to put that under control, they're beatable. And that's going to be a tough division right to the end, because the Rams, although they have not looked good, still have a lot of talent. And I think if their defense coagulates, comes together under Wade Phillips in the second half of the season, they could be, you know, as much of a threat as they were last year.
Big George Kittle fan. Big George. Remember, I had him, John, in our fantasy league.
You had him last year.
I had him last year.
I was very
yeah.
impressed by that.
And every time he got the ball, I'd say, "Put that kettle on." True story. Empty room most of the time.
He would say it every time, and the laughter diminished greatly.
Greatly by
every
the
single
end.
Time.
By the end of the season, it was oh god. Let's move on, guys, to the live games, and let's see what we think. First game is the second game taking place, of course, in London. It is the Carolina Panthers taking on Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's a 2:30 start. It's kind of good for us, especially because it's an international break as well, which means Premier League is not going to get in the way of these games.
That's
which can happen sometimes. So no Premier League, and I mean international football, give or take. But no offense to international football fans. I'm sure there's one or two out there. Carolina Panthers are 3-4. We give them -2 on the spread. Tampa are an up and down team. Carolina are an up and down team. But John, Carolina do have Mr. McCaffrey.
Well, we all know how I feel about Christian McCaffrey, Kieran. Best running back in football. I think he proved it again last weekend. He's still relatively fresh in the league, but he looks like, going forward, as long as he steers clear of injury, we're looking at 1,000 yards on the ground, 1,000 yards receiving pretty much every season at least. And long may it continue for all the Run CMC fans out there.
Mike, what do you think?
McCaffrey right now is probably with maybe the exception of Russell Wilson, but probably even more so, the kind of like player a good team is most dependent on in order to win. So the question for Tampa is how do you stop Christian McCaffrey? And that's going to be a really interesting one to watch, because in general, Todd Bowles' defenses in Arizona with Bruce Arians and now are based on having quick guys, safeties playing linebacker, and cluttering up the middle of the field, making it hard for running backs to get out on pass routes. So, you know, to me, that's going to be the first question. The second one is, when you watch Carolina's defense, it's predicated, much like Buffalo's, on keeping receivers in front of you and not getting beat deep and making teams march the ball down with consistency to score against you. And of course, Tampa is more of a big play kind of offense, and not one where Jameis Winston is going to keep hitting 10-yard underneath passes in order to do that. So I think that's a fascinating matchup too. And the problem with London games is that you just don't know who's going to come out flat or not. You know, not necessarily that one team will, but they sometimes do. I think of the Ravens against the Jags a couple of years ago, where they were, you know, probably the much better team at the time, but they just came out and played horribly especially in the first half, by which time the game was done. And that makes me hesitate after getting burned on the Bears last week. It makes me hesitate on this one. I think realistically the Panthers should be a bigger favorite than 2, but you know, I would be tempted to go with the Bucks if you're, but I'd stay away from it.
a long and winding road.
I did a complete circle in the space of one sentence.
Yeah. Oh, it is a tough game. I'll tell you why, John, it's a tough game, right? Because the Panthers are inconsistent. Because Tampa are incredibly inconsistent.
Exactly.
And because London games are inconsistent, which makes it very, very tough. What I will say is that the points total is 47. Now, I think that will go over. But I'm willing to be told I'm wrong.
You're wrong, Kieran.
Thank you, John. And segment two begins.
If it does go over, I think you could make a pretty good case of thinking that Tampa could win that.
So Tampa and over. Well, you can do that. Match and total points, double 3-1, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and over. Boom.
There you go.
We found it.
We came together
as a team and found it. But that game takes place at 2:30. The 6 o'clock games is the Chiefs on a redemption mission. Houston Texans roll into town for this one. We touched a little bit, obviously, on the Chiefs, and we did talk about Patrick Mahomes. One thing, I think he looked a little beat up on Sunday night. Mike, did you think he looked a little bit beat up at times, Mr. Mahomes?
More than a little. And looked like he'd injured his ankle, which is something to watch because he injured it last year as well. And of course he's dependent on mobility to make plays, to keep plays alive. And he and Russell Wilson have that same ability to make precise deep throws while on the run. Wilson had a play this week where he threw running to his left, sort of against his body, to the left corner of the end zone and put it right on the money for Lockett to make the touchdown catch. Mahomes can do that same kind of thing, only more so, because he's got more zip on the short to medium throws. So if he is hurt, that's a real problem. And, you know, Houston is supposedly a really good defensive team, but, you know, they laid 453 points on the non-existent Atlanta defense. So I think they'll take a little bit of heart from that. And Deshaun Watson, if he knows he's not going to get sacked, last week was the first time, I don't know, in his career, it might be that he didn't get sacked in a game. If he's free from that worry, they could create some problems there. But I just don't see them winning that game.
Yeah, I just want to remind everyone that the 4-1 Seattle team, was the only time during this season that I've backed them. So Russell Wilson is great unless you really need him to come up with something special. Texans, Balf, 3-2 heading in to face the Chiefs. How do you see this one going? I mean, I think we're both Deshaun fans.
I'm a fan of both of these quarterbacks, to be quite honest. But yeah, I'm a big Deshaun Watson fan. But Mike completely hit the nail on the head there about his... Deshaun Watson's performance is very much dependent upon how his offensive line protects him. And as he said, the first time he hasn't been sacked in God knows how long was last Sunday. And he saw the sort of type of performance he put on there. 3 touchdowns to Will Fuller alone. I thought it was a great performance. So it illustrates how much of a dangerous quarterback this guy is when the situation is correct. Now, will that be enough to beat the Chiefs? We've talked about them a little bit already on the show today, so I won't labor the point. But in this one, I expect it to be a high-scoring game, and I just can't see the Chiefs losing 2 in a row.
Excellent. Okay, the late game actually promises a lot, to be honest. The 9:25 contest, San Francisco, or 9:05 actually, got that wrong. Don't want to get tweets. San Francisco 49ers at LA Rams. I'm really, really looking forward to this one, I have to say, guys. Obviously, Jimmy G is my quarterback of choice, so that's one of the things I'm looking forward to about it. But I think we're going to find out a lot about both sides, pretenders versus contenders or vice versa, someone who was in the Super Bowl last year versus someone who could make the Super Bowl this year. It's got all the setup of a really classic contest, and it's a 3.5-point spread, which, as you know, Mike, is a dangerous one, isn't it?
Absolutely. If we look back as far back as last week on the Steelers Ravens game, this is a fascinating one because the Niners are on a roll, obviously, undefeated. They came off the bye week and got a good win over Cleveland, and the Rams are kind of struggling, which is not that much of a surprise. But you know, you would have thought that they would be in better position at this point of the season, and they're coming off a loss to Seattle in a game they really should have won. You don't expect Greg Zuerlein to miss 44-yard field goals with the game on the line. Although you also don't expect to take a delay of game penalty that moves the ball 5 yards back. I find this one to be a real test, primarily for the 49ers and how well they are going to travel in these circumstances. You know, they're unbeaten at home and on the road, obviously, and their games were split 2 games each. So they've been able to win on the road. If they get in a shootout, will they be able to cope? I don't think so, because they don't have the wide receivers to be in a shootout. But the Rams are not as much of a shootout team this year for two reasons. One is Todd Gurley has not been as explosive as he should be, and if he isn't, their passing game suffers as well as the running game. And two is Jared Goff, for whatever reason, looks more and more like a programmed quarterback. And he's throwing for lots of yards, but he's throwing for lots of yards in games where they're coming from behind, and teams are able to stop drives by stopping a couple of passes, and then he's having to start over. So he threw 60-some-odd passes 2 weeks ago. He threw 49 against Seattle. They don't, you know, they win if he can throw fewer than, I would just put a number on it, I'd say 30, 32. If he doesn't have to pass that much, they're going to win. But he has to pass more because Gurley's not a force.
Yeah, well, San Francisco and hot water, of course, Kittles make a wonderful thing in hot water, John. So I'm going to stop now.
I'm going to stop.
John, would you like to tell everyone listening as well, to go back to an earlier point there, yeah, about what I would describe as a man crush that you have on Greg the Leg, Zuerlein?
Mr. Zuerlein.
Once described him as like a wide receiver.
Yeah, that's strictly in fantasy football terms, Kieran, and that's true. He's a wide receiver too, numbers-wise.
He's genuinely not. He's not. He's a kicker. Kicker and defense are the last two things he drafted in any fantasy league.
Did you win the fantasy league last year, Kieran?
I've won 3 years in a row. Let's move on from this fight. San Francisco 49ers at LA Rams. It is a fight, Mike. I'm sorry.
Look at him backing away, tail between his legs.
I've won it 3 times in the last 5 years.
Well,
but anyway,
let's
just move on. 49ers, Rams, what way do you see it going?
I kind of echo pretty much what Mike was saying. I think it's a very, very interesting test of this 49ers team. And like you say, the Rams are misfiring a little bit, especially in comparison to how sort of tightly oiled a unit they were last year. And a lot of that, again, I'm just basically repeating what Mike said, but the fact that Todd Gurley is, you know, basically playing at a 50% rate to what he was last year, it's hurting them in more ways than one. So this is, if this was this time last year, it's a Rams walkover, but I'm not so sure now.
From my point of view, and I know, you know, you two guys are the experts, of course, but from my point of view, San Francisco 49ers, 6-4 on the money line is a very, very, very tempting price.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. Last one that we look at really in much detail. So I know Monday Night Football is Lions at Packers, but it's a long way away at this stage, really. Sunday Night Football is Steelers at Chargers. Mike, we'll just go to you quickly first on this one, because I'll tell you why. Chargers looked bad on Sunday. Bad.
Yes.
That's all I'd say.
Yes, and probably the main reason for that is teams have figured out their line doesn't block very well and protect Phillip Rivers. And although, if I remember right, Rivers wasn't sacked at all in that game. He was running for his life most of the time. And that's not really what you want. And oddly enough, you know, they've got two good receiving threats, and they don't seem to be able to get the most out of them. And for some reason, they decided to give Melvin Gordon the bulk of the carries, and then they went away from the running game completely. So Austin Eckler really didn't feature in the running game. They were throwing to him. And I saw a quip. He caught 15 passes in that game for only 86 yards. And that was the first time since 1950 that anyone had caught that many passes for that few yardage, for that little yardage. And I thought that was just a kind of thing where they don't really know what they're doing. And of course they're at home and they get a home. They don't get as much home field advantage as most teams. But the Steelers are going to come in with a third string quarterback who is a free agent. They picked up out of a Division II college. A rookie making that jump to the NFL, and that's going to be a tough situation because where the Chargers can be good is defensively, and Denver only put 20 points on them last week, but that was enough to win because the Chargers' offense was pathetic. Two field goals off their offense, that was it. So I wouldn't write the Steelers off on this one, but I don't see the Steelers having the kind of offense even that Denver was able to generate on the ground against the Chargers to be able to win that one.
John, we actually watched most of that game together last weekend, and I think one of the things that you mentioned while we were watching it, with other people, by the way, was that, just to be clear,
have other friends.
Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler, both being fit, both being well, and both being ready to play, offers a problem more than a good thing.
Well, it's one of those, ask any coach in the league and they'll tell you that's the sort of headache they want to have rather than having neither player like that available to them. I think it's going to take a while to really reestablish Gordon in there, but I think in a week or two or 3 weeks, he's going to be the, without question, number one
really, despite what Eckler's done so far.
Well, Eckler was there last year, and Gordon completely outperformed him. I think he is the better of the two running backs. Eckler did he put his hand up there for a more productive role in that offense significantly with how he handled himself in the first four or five games of the season when Gordon was holding out. But now that he's back there, and you're going to be paying this guy a lot of money, you got to use him.
Yeah, you got to give it to the hot hand as well. Okay, let's do our same game multi before we chat about what the best bets for the weekend. We're going to go with the game really that stands out for me, which is San Francisco LA Rams. Mike, you're a genius on the old total points. Total points for this one's quite big. It's 50.5 at the moment. Would you be going under or over on that?
I think I'd go over on it, even at 50.
Going over?
That's, 27-24? Which is usually the way I look at over-unders. I try to put in my mind what the game score might be and see. You could argue it's more like 27-21, and then you're under. But I see the Rams breaking out in this one for some reason. So we're on opposite ends of the spectrum here. But I think the Rams will put up a few points, and that'll make it easy to hit that. If they go over 30, I think that's easy then.
Obviously, we've mentioned him a lot, so maybe Kittle or Todd Gurley for a touchdown. Which would you prefer, John?
Who I thought? You can count on both of those guys, I suppose. But just watching the 49ers during the week, obviously, as a Browns fan, it wasn't great viewing for me. But Breida is looking pretty good. He got that 88-yard run from all the way to the house. I thought he could be the guy to be a big difference maker in this game.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a good shout. And in terms of, will we take San Francisco? Will we go with handicap or would you go?
I'm going actually quite... I'm going to be the opposite to Mike. I think the 49ers are going to win, and I'm going to go... What was it? 50 was the number, was it?
50 would have been
50,
the
number. I'm going to go under.
Okay. We'll throw that in. Game of opinions. Time for what we would describe really as best bets of the weekend. John, you've got yours highlighted on the screen. It's the best bet of the year, people.
I'm sort of strangely fascinated by this Redskins-Dolphins game that we have coming up next weekend. It's two winless teams so far, one of whom is now without a coach. Oh, ostensibly, they could both be without coaches.
We haven't covered it in detail.
But I'm fascinated to see how this goes because we've talked about it on a couple of the previous episodes of this show, but there seems to be some sort of fire sale going on in Miami where they're just stripping their assets. The Redskins are not a polished unit at the moment, they're now without their head coach, having canned Jay Gruden at 5 in the morning on Monday, or whatever day it was, Monday, I think. So this game, really anything could happen, but I think the most likely thing to happen is the Redskins to win in quite a blowout. So that's kind of my novel win. I like the Terry McLaurin on the wide receiver they have going on there. I think he's capable of putting in a couple of touchdowns. And I've just not seen seen anything of Miami to say that they're capable of putting up any real sort of fight this season.
Okay, well, I mean, the spread's 3.5, so if you're saying blowout, you can look at other ones.
Yeah.
Dolphins are getting 3.5 at home. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, it'll be an interesting one to look at on Sunday. I'm actually going Thursday night for my game in New York Giants at New England Patriots. Yes, I know the handicap line is 16.5 points, but the Patriots are playing blowout football. They covered the line against the Dolphins, which was huge. They covered the line against Washington Redskins, despite it being 9-7, I think, at one stage, and the handicap line and that being 24. They covered that. So 16.5 at home against the New York Giants team that are coming in with a lot of injuries from what we're hearing. I'm not entirely sure who he's going to actually throw the ball to. I'm going to go Pats at a big one. Mike, what are you looking at? Sneak peek, of course.
I like going over in that game. The over-under is 42 for the Patriots-Giants. And I like that a lot more than the 50 in the Rams-49ers game. I like these home teams getting points against not very good teams, which is the case with Miami Redskins, but even more so with Arizona-Atlanta. And Arizona's getting 2.5 at home against the Falcons, who can't play defense. And I had the Cardinals straight up last week on the road, where they got a win again in Cincinnati. I think they can do the same at home against Atlanta. It might wind up being my outside bet rather than my best bet, but I like the Cardinals getting 2.5. I'd like them more with 3, but of course I would.
Yeah, we're all greedy at this stage. Just before we go, and that usually is where we wrap it up, just one has caught my eye, because sometimes people can say, obviously we record the show on a Wednesday morning and it can go out. Some people can listen to it on Sunday and the lines do change. I noticed some of the matches. I mean, that is the nature of the beast. And one of the things that I will say about this week is an interesting line to watch is Seattle Seahawks at Cleveland Browns. Now, when this line opened up, the Browns were actually favourites by 1.5. I now see that it's moved to where Seattle are favourites by -1.5 points, and you can get the Browns at home +1.5. If you're listening to us on Sunday, I would be very interested to see and go and check what the line is on that match, because it will not stay like that. But I couldn't.
Well, you think the bookies will have forgotten what they saw Monday night?
I think we're all trying to forget
that one.
I could not believe that Seattle, who are 4-1 and firing with Russell Wilson, going to Cleveland, were underdogs. That has been rectified now.
I'm not sure who offered these odds, but I also saw odds prior to the start of the season, I must say, but I also saw odds that had Baker Mayfield a higher MVP candidate than Russell Wilson. So
yeah,
that was inaccurate. Yeah. It would be
the line that intrigues me is the Monday night line, the Cowboys at the Jets, with the Cowboys giving 7.5, which I would have thought would have been higher, even with their performance the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a fine point. Yeah, 7.5 is the Dallas Cowboys at the Jets. That's one to keep an eye on as well. Gentlemen, we'll talk about all of that when we reconvene next week. Hopefully we've thrown a few winners and we'll stop what is, it hasn't been poor, but it has been a fortnight of strange results at times in the NFL. But that, as the season wears on, as Mike, you always say, that's how it can happen.
That's what makes it interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. My thanks to Mike Carson for joining us on the line from his palatial mansion somewhere in the English countryside. to John Balfe, to joining us from his, I assume,
inner city home in
crap,
the center of Dublin.
Crap hole apartment. Basically squalor living.
We're getting a roof.
And to me, somewhere in the middle.
And thanks to you for listening.
And thanks to you for listening. A reminder, you can catch us every single Wednesday on NFL Only Better, and you can get football and racing on Thursdays as well. So do subscribe to the network wherever you are listening to us. Do subscribe, leave a comment, leave us a review. We do read everything, so if you've anything you'd like to say, just leave it there. We will talk to you again next week. Best of luck, and please do gamble responsibly, of course.